I'm happy now to welcome Pam Coleman. She is the State Field Director of Organizing for America. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks very much. Very nice to be here.
Now, what is Organizing for America?
Organizing for America is the successor organization to the Obama campaign. After the inauguration, there was a decision made based on surveys and requests to folks who had been involved in the campaign as to what kind of organization they wanted to be part of going forward. And overwhelmingly, people said they wanted to be involved. They wanted to be involved in issues campaigning. They wanted to be involved in making sure that they stayed involved in their community. So Organizing for America was born out of that desire by supporters who had been involved to stay involved.
Now, the campaign was really unprecedented in the involvement of ordinary people. Many people who'd never even voted before came out, and so on. And people who'd never given money to a political campaign before, and so on. How has that been after the election and really after the first year mark?
Well, it's a great question because, as you say, so many people were new to it. And in fact, I was new to it. I had been politically aware, but never politically active until the Obama campaign.
Really?
When I became one of the super vols, as they said, I traveled to
super volunteers.
Super volunteers. I was actually living in Italy when the campaign started. So when the Republican Party announced their vice presidential candidate, it became a really rallying cry for me personally. And I came back from Italy, and I found a friend in a battleground state where I could live, which was Florida. And I lived on their couch for 2 months, and I worked for the Obama campaign. And it changed my life. I mean, literally changed my life. I had gone from just politically aware to politically active, and understanding that community organizing was the most important thing that I could do personally, that seeing the folks who were involved for the very first time, understanding what was important to them in their own communities and their own lives, with the fact that they couldn't send their kids to college, or they didn't think so, they barely could make their mortgage payment, the economy was falling apart, that it was really critical to me personally, as I saw and experienced these people, to get involved in a way personally. So when the campaign ended, like a lot of people, there was a huge letdown of momentum for me and for most people after, because there was a huge euphoria having elected President Obama. But then it was, okay, my job is done, because I didn't know what it was like to be politically involved.
Well, and there's a sense, I think, on the part of voters for whom voting is the primary expression of citizenship that, okay, that's all I can do.
And that's also an important point in what Organizing for America is about. Because if we leave it only to Election Day, if we don't stay involved in our communities and stay involved in politics from a local level to a national level, we can't blame anyone if things don't go our way. And when it comes to governance and campaigning, they're two very different worlds. And so this is a conversation I have on a daily basis as to, well, the campaign they thought was going to go in one direction, and then the campaign gets to Washington and the president has to govern. And he said most recently, as of Wednesday, it could have been last Wednesday, that it's not a political thing to do when you have to make a hard decision. You need to make a hard decision if it's the right thing for the country. And I think that's a really difficult place for people to be in, who had been so excited and euphoric about the president's campaign.
I think there are many people who felt that Obama ran on a platform of change in some very specific areas, and then when it really comes down to it, you know, huge amounts of money going to military spending, healthcare being a little stalled, and we'll talk about healthcare in a moment, and policies very much continuing in the Bush era vein. And they're saying, I mean, many people saying, what changed? What did we vote for? I'm going back into my hole and not voting anymore.
Also a very good point, and one that I do hear every day. And what I remind folks is that when then Senator Obama ran, he did run on a platform of hope and change. But hope and change is very different things to different people. So I say that if there's a candidate who I can vote for and my dad can vote for in the same breath.
Who's your dad?
My dad's a bit of a Republican back east. That if we can vote for the same candidate.
He voted for Obama?
He did. If we can vote for the same candidate, then there's someone who's going to be disappointed when it comes time for governance. And also, Obama ran as a centrist Democrat. He never ran as an ideologue. He said specifically, I want to get us out of Iraq. And he specifically said, we're going to have to look more closely at Afghanistan. So there are policies that we all wanted as this is a very progressive community. People who wanted to think hope and change meant a certain thing. But when when you look at what the underlying agenda was during the campaign and what President Obama said during the campaign closely, you'll see that it didn't push such a far agenda on either side. And that's what I think people, if they stop to think about what was really said during the campaign, and then understanding that when you get to Washington, things must progress in a certain vein. You have two parties now. There's a way that we have to make things work from a governmental standpoint and a governance standpoint.
So healthcare is one of the areas that you were looking at. It's one of the things that I think everybody, regardless of political party, I can't even believe this is a partisan issue, is really concerned about, because a lot of people literally cannot afford to get sick. Where are we now? I mean, we've had this sort of filibuster-proof majority of Democrats in the Senate, and then now it became 59 Democrats rather than 60, and there is this idea. I mean, if I recall correctly, in the years that I've been alive that Republicans have been in office, they never needed 60 votes in the Senate to do anything, but somehow when Democrats are, they do. What's going on?
Healthcare has been talked about for 50, 100 years. It's been negotiated and debated for the last year. As the president recently said, there's really not much more that we can talk about with respect to healthcare. There's nothing new we can say. All the ideas are on the table, and the time has come for the Congress to put their money where their mouth is and help the American people. And every major poll from Pfizer to Newsweek to the Washington Post that discusses healthcare with folks, everybody overwhelmingly wants to change the system. If you pitch any sort of poll as that doesn't take into consideration the underlying elements of what the president's healthcare program is, then people are freaked out because there's been an operating anti-machine against what healthcare is. If you ask people the underlying...
Wait a minute, an operating what?
The opposition has had a very pronounced and ambitious campaign against healthcare.
Against healthcare reform.
Against healthcare reform, exactly. So, but if you ask people about the underlying premises of the president's plan, which is it fair to have pre-existing conditions that prevent people from getting health insurance? No. Pre-existing conditions are wrong. Is it fair to discriminate based on gender? No, that's wrong. Is it fair to tap out someone's benefits over time? No. Should you drop people when they're sick? No. All those things which are the basis of health insurance reform, everybody can agree on. What gets lost in the shuffle is how it gets packaged. And because it got packaged in a way in our hyper-media-sensitive society where everybody can blog and everybody can have a website and everyone can weigh in 24/7, it doesn't give anybody the opportunity to really study the issues. So a show like yours, which actually addresses issues, you know, in a period of time, gives people the opportunity to think about it rather than just getting the bam, bam, every soundbite that comes out gets as much credibility and credence as every other soundbite. Nothing is really distilled. So what's happening now is that the president has proposed a final negotiated settlement between the House and the Senate, adding the best of the Republican ideas, and telling the Congress now it's time to pass it. There's no longer any time to wait. So the procedure is that the House will pass the Senate bill, and that the Senate will go to a majority vote on some extra provisions, and then the House will say, yes, I'm happy with that, and the president will sign it. And that's what the procedure is.
So basically, all the things that were in the House bill, like the public option, don't even have a chance of coming back into the final bill? It's just the Senate bill and nothing else?
No, the Senate bill the president has proposed alterations and modifications to the Senate bill. But the problem with the public option is that not enough senators have weighed in on it to say they would vote for it. So I think as of right now...
The New Mexico delegation has.
Absolutely, and we applaud their efforts. But I think there are 26 or 27 senators, and you need 51 senators. So, unfortunately, it seems at this moment, as we sit here today, now, of course, in anything...
Would they vote against it if it were in there? Would they have voted against a health care reform package that had the public option in it just because it had it in it?
Well, I'm not sure if that's if that would be true. However, in order to get it back in, it's not clear that the public option could actually go into the majority vote because it's not purely a funding issue. And when it gets thrown back to the Senate in that 51 majority, they have to be specific budgetary items, which the parliamentarian has weighed in on.
I thought that was the most specific budget item because it would bring down health care costs by providing a government competition to private industry.
And that's what you're saying is true. However, it's the how does it get funded? I mean, so example, the 51 majority is normally seen in taxes and budget reconciliation, which is how it's been used by the Republicans for the in the last 15 or 20 years. So every vote
to
that's
pass
come
anything.
To pass anything.
So
But they're all budgetarily related. So it's a budget reconciliation, purely budget reconciliation to the tax cuts. They're specifically and purely with respect to budget. So with respect to the public option, if the public option had come back in purely without being a majority, without it being the majority, then surely it would be in. But it didn't. It hasn't gone through. It didn't get out of the House in a way that could get to the Senate in a way. And again, we're talking about governance. We're talking about you have 535 legislators and a president who wants certain things, but you have 535 folks who need to agree to the extent they can on behalf of legislation. And this is really important to remember, that every major piece of legislation that's come out in the last 40 years, from Medicare to Social Security to the Civil Rights Act, people on both sides screamed about those acts when they first were signed. Over time, they all got better, all of them.
In other words, this isn't strong enough, this doesn't have everything that we need in it, kind of thing.
Every single one. So what we say is that from an Organizing for America standpoint, and we are the field team for the president, that's our role, that's our job. We say, listen, recognize that all these things happen, all these bills happen in the past, these laws got better. Let's get something passed. This is the time we need to pass it. If we don't pass it and the midterm elections come up in November, and I'm sure all your listeners are sophisticated enough to know that in November there will be a turnover in the House and the Senate.
Well, every single person in the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C. is up for re-election, and a third of the people in the Senate.
So, and it is traditional that when there's a new president in place, there is usually a decent loss to that president's party. So this is the time to pass this bill. This is the time to get it in place so that we can make it better.
We're talking to Pam Coleman. She is the state field director of Organizing for America. Now, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show was because recently somebody was saying, and I can't remember where this quotation is from, that Americans have gotten to the point where we see ourselves as consumers and voters, and that is how we express ourselves, and not so much as citizens. And so this question of what does citizenship mean, what does participatory citizenship mean, I think we do see this in Santa Fe with people going to the city council meetings and having, as we just saw, very active elections for city council and mayor and local positions and things like that. But how can people be citizens on a national level? I read a lot of online, both blogs and newspapers and reporting from various sources, and I do see, one of the things that struck me most in healthcare, I was on one of those, I think it was the New York Times, but then people can make their comments, and one person said, I'm an emergency medical technician, and I've been to the scenes of many accidents where people refuse to be transported with injuries, with serious injuries, in an ambulance because they're more afraid of going bankrupt than they are of suffering from their injuries that were sustained in a fire or a car accident. And it's things like that that really blew my mind about the healthcare. These are things you don't always hear. But back to the question of citizenship, how do you see people coming into citizenship and actually participating on a national level?
Well, it's a really great question because this is what Organizing for America is all about. And going back just to your point about healthcare and people being petrified of going bankrupt because they have to go be transported with their injuries, this is one of the major reasons that we need health insurance reform, because it shouldn't be that you decide to have a concussion and go home and try to keep your eyes open all night than it is to go to the emergency room and be treated because these services are there to treat you.
I mean, it's crazy, and no developed country except us has that.
Absolutely
problem.
Not. And so that's all the more reason. It is a crying shame that the United States has a healthcare system the way it is. We need to fix it, and we need to fix it by passing healthcare reform now and then building on it and making it better and better. So that being said, the participatory democracy that we live in, and it's an interesting quote about consumerism and being a voter, even here in Santa Fe, the turnout for the mayoral and city council elections was, 25 or 27%. It was woefully low. And it's not that it was lower than average. It was probably just about average. But the way that we can change our society is to be involved locally. And it's not just politically. It's not just I'm going to go campaign and campaign for city council. It's how can I be involved in my community in a way that makes my community better? So if it's running for school board or city council or land commissioner, that's terrific. But if it's more close to home, as in my neighborhood, my neighbor needs a neighborhood watch program, or my kids need to have a crossing guard, or anything that's going to make you and your neighbor's lives better by actively standing up and saying, we need to band together. I'm going to have my voice be heard, but I'd like other voices to be heard with me. That's the essence of being in a community. So a community organizer is just a facilitator in order to get that to happen, to find that spark, whatever's important to that particular citizen, and saying, okay, that's important to you. Let's find a way to make that issue important in a way that gets something done.
Well, having a crossing guard, and I've seen movements to save the lives of prairie dogs and environmental issues and health issues on a local level, health and safety and school, and these are things that people can feel empowered about because they are local issues, and because, especially in a city of this size, a lot of people know each other and you get to know people because it's a small town. But then when you look at things like banking reform and the fact that people who are working in these just gigantic, powerful banks on Wall Street have no relationship to the rest of us, to ordinary people, but are taking tremendous advantage of our lives and our paychecks through their policies. It's pretty hard to get around it. And feeling like you can be a participant on the big issues or on the untold billions going to military spending, whatever it is that is your that's your thing. How can we be a participatory citizen in terms of those things?
Okay, so think about the first example that you gave with respect to the banks and the big banks. I mean, I'm sure most of your listeners know about Brian Egolf's bill to divest and have money that's in big giant banks outside of New Mexico borders come back home and be in New Mexico so that it can benefit New Mexicans and benefit New Mexican businesses. And so that was a state legislator.
Came close.
Came very close. But it came so close, and so people rallied around that and became aware of it as an issue, and don't think that it might not happen next term, because now people are aware. So you have a state legislature, a rookie, really, who had a great idea, who people rallied around, and so the rest of the legislature will know that this is something that's going to have to be reckoned with. And so I think, as I recall, I was at a town hall with Brian and with Peter Wirth, and I'm pretty sure one of the constituents, a constituent from their districts, had come to them with this idea. I'm pretty sure, and they can correct me, and they can call in and correct me if I'm wrong. But if that's the case, then I'm pretty sure it was that issue. You're talking about a citizen who just decides, you know, I have a good idea. Let me get in touch with my representative. Let me see who's sympathetic to this issue. I mean, how much more participatory can you get?
Right.
He got this close.
Right.
So we all have a voice. It's a voice.
So it's really finding creative ways to get those ideas out there. Yeah, I've been trying to get people to legalize marijuana and then tax the living heck out of it. That's solve our budget problems in the state of New Mexico. We're talking to Pam Coleman. All right, so you are part of Organizing for America. I'm not kidding about that. I mean, anyway, Organizing for America. Are you looking for participants? Are you looking for people in Santa Fe? I mean, you're the state field director. Are you looking for people in greater New Mexico? And if so, what can they do?
Well, up until recently, I was the regional field director for Santa Fe and northern New Mexico, and I have been here since the fall recruiting potential volunteers, listening to what people have to say about what issues are important to them, what can we do that makes your life better, and how can we do that together, and how can we do that on a national stage. So we are always looking for people to come together. We're looking for people to come together on local issues. We're looking for people to come together on national issues. Right now we're talking about healthcare. We'll talk about financial regulatory reform, the jobs creation. We'll talk about the Recovery Act. And then come November, we'll talk about electing candidates who are supportive of presidential policies, which are all about helping the middle class and helping people live better lives. So I'm always looking for volunteers. Organizing for America is always looking for volunteers. I can certainly, folks can log on to organizingforamerica.com to find things that are going around near them. There are events that go on periodically. In fact, I have strategy sessions coming up all around the state, including locally here in Los Alamos. I have one coming up on the 10th. But we are always in the business of helping people organize. And I see my job very specifically as inspiring people, educating them about the issues, and then organizing them. And as I said earlier, I moved back here from Italy. I had La Dolce Vita. I came back here because I passionately believe that when people have a spark and can be pointed in the right direction, that there's nothing that Americans can't do. Nothing.
Pamela Coleman, how can people get in touch with you?
They can call me directly or they can send me an email. My email is Coleman, P, C-O-L-E-M-A-N-P, at dnc.org, or they can call me at 505-715-0787. I will take every call and respond to every email.
Pam Coleman, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and then jazz.